This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Yes, big news for the Four Nations. Charlie McAvoy out for Thursday's game with an upper body injury. He was a very notable figure the other night. He absolutely laid out Connor McDavid, played 20 minutes in the game. And, of course, the other situation brewing there is that Cale Makar is back in for Canada. And he's among the two or three best defensemen on the planet Earth. So, call me crazy, but I think that might be significant. I do think the U.S. has an advantage in goal, but it's going to be a different dynamic. It's going to be game seven. That was a very significant win for the United States to go into Canada, do it the way they did it, but it was really in the end just a preliminary round game. They also beat Canada at the Vancouver Olympics, and a week later, Sid beat them with the golden goal. As I recall. So really, it was just a preliminary round game, and now the dynamic shifts to where you're expected to win. And you're playing at home, on home soil. It's just different. And now you're without McAvoy, who delivered the hit round the world the other night, and the other guys have one of the greatest defensemen on the planet back in, and he's going to play half the game. Like a lot of times in hockey, you say, well, you know, it ain't basketball. You don't have one guy dominating a game. You have people playing 18 minutes or whatever out of a 60-minute game. Makar could play 30 out of the 60 minutes. So that's going to be very interesting to monitor. And meanwhile, Limits, I mentioned some Matthew Stafford news, or at least a news story that came out of The Athletic yesterday. Didn't see it till this morning. Here's what was written by the Rams beat writer at The Athletic. It's not a given that Stafford will remain with the Rams despite both sides' initial openness to work out a deal. The Rams have to recognize that the most competitive path forward is for Stafford to return for another year and one more run while he continues to play at a high level, the story says. But the fact that Coach Sean McVay and GM Les Snead didn't overly commit to Stafford in season-ending news conferences basically signaled their open phone lines for a potential trade. What about that?
He would probably be with Trevor Lawrence obviously off the table, the most best guy that they could acquire. I mean, in terms of just in the moment, in the now, 1 year, who would you want to be the quarterback?
Would you give up a first-round pick for him?
That's the thing. I would not.
I don't think. See, Ben said a few months back, or maybe a month ago, I don't know, I lose track of time, that the Steelers are not just a quarterback away. And my contention was every team is a quarterback away. Look what C.J. Stroud did for a mediocre Houston roster. Look what Burrow did with an offensive line that was absolute crud his first year and remains so, I might add. But it depends on which quarterback. Are the Steelers a Matthew Stafford away from real contention? I don't know about that. He's 37. And while he's still playing at a high level, like I think he could deliver you one more top 10 type season. He's still playing at a high level. He is. He's not the guy he was. I mean, when he came to the Rams and they won the Super Bowl, he had 41 touchdowns. 41 and threw for almost 5,000 yards. This year he threw for 20 touchdowns. And way over 1,000 yards less, completing fewer percentage of his passes. He's still very good, I would say. But he's not close to that guy anymore. He's declining. So you take a declining, immobile quarterback behind this line who doesn't have the advantage of Sean McVay's brilliance. In fact, to the contrary, he has Artie Smith throwing frozen cadavers on the field to throw to. Forget it. No, would I do it? I guess for the right price, if I thought I could still win big, but it just in many ways doesn't make sense to me, especially not for a high draft pick. No, I'm saying no to this.
I'm saying no to it as well because of how many needs they still have on the roster. And, you know, a part of that too, when you were talking about all those young quarterbacks that made a difference, like, those are young legs, young arms. Like, Matthew Stafford is not the quarterback that he once was just even, you know, a couple, 2 years ago, let alone 5 years ago. He would make them better. I think he would make them win a playoff game. You can win a playoff game with Matthew Stafford.
Would he last the season? I don't know about that. Well, what about the fact he's coming in and playing not for Sean McVay? Would Matthew Stafford thrive in an Arthur Smith offense? In a Tomlin offense?
That's a great question.
Thank you, Limits. I thought of it myself.
It's the same question that I had with Sam Darnold. And you know what the real concerning thing might be is what type of quarterback, what quarterback right now would thrive in the Arthur Smith offense?
That's a great, maybe Justin Fields.
That would maybe be it. Like that's a huge question. And how ridiculous is it that we have that question? What type of quarterback, what quarterback right now would thrive, would be in the best position with Arthur Smith? I don't know. We didn't see it in Atlanta. Tennessee was Ryan Tannehill, more of a game manager, but they had Hall of Famer Derrick Henry running the football. What a problem.
Well, we have two opinions now on Aaron Rodgers as well. Bill Barnwell, and this actually makes sense. Bill Barnwell, who I respect as an NFL writer, reporter, has suggested that Aaron Rodgers is like Mike Tomlin's dream quarterback, even in his current state. In this sense, he's allergic to turning the ball over. He almost never does. A little bit at the beginning of the year, but down the stretch this year, he was back to his old self, at least in that respect, in the fact that he never turned the ball over. Like, here's some numbers for you, oh limitless wonder. Because of the formula, Barnwell says, of what the Steelers do on offense fits what Rodgers does best. It makes sense, and that's protect the football. Steelers 35-13 over the last 4 years when they don't turn it over or turn it over once, 0-1, 35-13. Twice or more, 3-16-1. As he says, every team's better when they protect the football, but the Steelers, it's a significant difference. Aaron Rodgers' last 10 games of the season. You ready for this? Twinkie. 18 touchdowns, 4 picks. Barnwell says he's obviously not the Rodgers of 5 or 10 years ago, but he can protect the football. What does Tomlin like better than that? Protecting the football. I'm surprised that's not like the Penguins have the sign, it's a great day for hockey all over the place. At PPG Paints, above the locker room and everything. Protect the football would be the one for Tomlin.
It's a great day to protect the football, everybody. Happy Sunday, 1 o'clock. Protecting the football is our goal. That is our standard.
Yes.
We're going to go on that mantra.
And you know what? That actually makes a lot of sense. I'm betting, but what doesn't is Aaron Rodgers can't really move anymore either. So what does Mike Tomlin value more, protecting the football or quarterback mobility? Having said that, it wouldn't surprise me if this search eventually winds its way to Aaron Rodgers?
Hold on. Don't we have the answer to that question based on what happened this past year, where he had mobile Justin Fields that doesn't take care of the ball as much towards Russell Wilson, more game manager protecting the football?
How many interceptions did Fields throw?
How many did he have called back on flags as well? He protected it pretty well, comparatively speaking, compared to Chicago a year ago. But do you get what I'm saying? Like, Russell Wilson is more of the protect the football veteran, make the right decision compared to Fields.
Yeah.
Mobile quarterback.
I still think that Tomlin favors mobility over everything, it seems, with a quarterback. But maybe not. And maybe this would draw them into a marriage here. The all-time protector of the football coming here. I could see it. However, Adam Schefter just weighed in. I'm reading Steelers Depot right now. According to ESPN Radio, he says, let's say Pittsburgh's the obvious landing spot for Aaron Rodgers in our hypothetical. So Pittsburgh now is willing to not discuss a deal with Wilson or Fields. It's not going to check in on Matthew Stafford if the Rams decide they're going to trade him. It's not going to look into any other quarterback that's a free agent, either Sam Darnold, whoever it may be, not going to consider any of those. They're going to say, you know what? We believe Aaron Rodgers is better than all these alternatives right now, so we're going to focus on him. I don't see that. Like, that's not where this is at. Pittsburgh could make some sense, Schefter says, but I don't think Pittsburgh's starting its search with Aaron Rodgers. Could it wind up there? Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. I wouldn't be surprised. How could anybody be surprised with any development based on what happened last year when they blew out Kenny Pickett and brought in Fields and Wilson? How could anybody be surprised? Is there something more surprising than that going to happen? I don't think so.
No, maybe trading for Aaron Rodgers originally from Green Bay would have been that. But at this point, no. All the cards are on the table when Omar Khan's running the team as the GM in terms of quarterbacks, like in signing Patrick Queen. I mean, we've seen that he is not afraid to make decisions that are different than what the Kevin Colbert administration was.
It's going to be something to track, and it's going to be starting this week. As Dulac says, inside those offices on the south side, Mike Tomlin mapping out, and it's very instructive, too, that he only mentions Mike Tomlin, mapping out the Steelers' future.
Texter, Andy in the car, replaced the Men of Steel sign with protect the football, touch it on the way out of the locker room, the big football they have on the outside of the locker room.
What did the texter say earlier about this whole idea of where we think the breakdown is with the quarterbacks? Because Dulac says it's split. Internally, it's split. And based on all available evidence, I'm going to guess, and it's just a guess, that Art is Wilson. Mike is Fields. Although you make some compelling points there, Limits. Omar, I don't know. Artie is clearly Fields. And I think Andy Weidel, based on the Jalen Hurts model, may be Fields.
One texter pointed something out that I thought was interesting. Any way that they want Russ back because they like his approach and want a new draft pick to learn that same approach, or maybe they believe that Russ will be more effective with different or more talented weapons in a second year in the system.
Maybe. Although, sort of butting heads with the offensive coordinator, and possibly, depending on what really happened here, possibly leaking stories that embarrass the organization probably isn't the behavior you want to be emulated, right?
I mean, I ideally not.
I don't think
ideally
so.
Ideally not.
I don't think so. All right, Limits. Coming up next is, speaking of this guy right here, the Limitless Express. We take a trip around the sports world with our dear friend, Fan Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. What are we going to hear on the Limitless Express today?
Well, Joe, there's a couple of NFL stories that have dropped, but also, what do you make of last night's flu game in the Four Nations face-off? What happened and what does it mean for the NHL? That's up next.
Well, I also have one. I got an unbelievable question.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
I love you. I love you.
They call them trolls or whatever, people that just sit behind a computer in their mom's basement.
You idiot.
It was a joke.
Hold on. Let me put my wooden teeth in so you can understand me better.
And we're sitting here again. We're sitting here again talking about the same things.
Shall I call you Ron? Dr. Dick? What should we go with
you
here?
You can call me Ron.
Hop on board, everybody. It's time for the Limitless Express. Limits. I was eating my feelings last night when my wife interjected at 10:30 when I was cramming some extra apple pie in.
Love apple pie. Like pumpkin pie, though, too.
I've been doing great on this. Well, good. Well, okay, average on eating sweets for a while. But last night, for some reason, I was extra anxious with some of the headlines out there and was watching the HBO special on the Lakers dynasty.
Winning time.
Fantastic. Binge watch the whole thing. Haven't eaten ice cream in a while. My daughter left some cookies and cream Haagen-Dazs in there, so I ate half of that. Then I ate a Danish. And then when I plowed into the apple pie at 10:30, I got yelled at. My wife said, "What are you doing? You've already eaten half a thing of ice cream. Stop. But I did it anyway. So I'm really focused today on getting back to normalcy, back to health. I have a giant mug of water. Do you see that?
I do.
I'm drinking that all day and have not yet eaten anything that would qualify as a sweet. It's early yet. It's early in the ball game. We're not even to technically lunchtime, although you and I just ate lunch. I got a long ways to go, a lot of headlines to look at, and a lot of anxiety to feel today.
Well, I'm personally not the most healthy person in the world either, because I like sweets, I like candy, more so I just like chocolate. But at the same time, I don't drink enough water. I need one of those big containers.
That's what I have, yeah. I'll get you one.
There are times when, like, it's late at night, and I feel, like, really dehydrated, or I'm with my friends, and I get very dehydrated.
Yeah.
And I start feeling, like, so awful. That happens, like, a couple times a year because I don't drink enough water. I need to take better care of myself.
Maybe we can do that together. Make a little pact where you and I drink these giant containers of water every day and don't eat sweets. If you see me eating one of the donuts on Friday, punch me or slap my hand or just say, remember we talked about sweets. So a little reminder.
I'm going to eat one donut, but as long as I don't eat like one and then go to the vending machine or something like that.
Good thinking. So can we help each other?
I think we should.
What's first today?
And I'm sorry for interrupting.
I interrupted you.
Our friend Pony interrupted everyone.
What did he do now?
This morning. Source! There's interest in former Giants quarterback Daniel Jones inside the Steelers organization.
I actually like Daniel Jones more than most.
Did I understand that correctly, Joe? Are we understanding correctly that Pony is saying there's interest in Daniel Jones? Here's the quote that Pony tweeted.
Yes.
The Steelers could do a lot worse than Daniel Jones, with the belief that he is, this is outside the quote, with the belief he actually is a good fit for Arthur Smith's offense and Mike Tomlin's preference for a mobile quarterback.
Man, that's putting it in very non-complimentary context, saying the Steelers could do worse for a fit in the Arthur Smith offense. Would you like to go over the quarterbacks that Arthur Smith has had since he left Ryan Tannehill?
Yes.
When it was Derrick Henry who made their entire offense. You remember watching the Titans back then?
Remember the Titans? Yes, I do.
And it was basically Derrick Henry left, Derrick Henry right, and once in a while, let's throw a play action in where the entire team tries to tackle Derrick Henry so Ryan Tannehill has his pick of receivers. And then A.J. Brown wanted to leave town because they couldn't take advantage of him. They couldn't take advantage of weapons in Atlanta, and they can't take advantage of weapons here. So I guess he might be a good fit in the Arthur Smith offense. I actually like Daniel Jones more than most, though. I'll say that. I'll say that.
I'm not in that boat.
Of course, most stink, but I like him better than most.
What do you like about him?
Nothing, really.
You just like
he's better than most of the other options.
Wow.
What? I think, let's put it this way, he's at least as good as Justin Fields. I think he's better, actually. He played for the Giants. Do you not have to discount that?
Yeah, and I mean, he did have some success with the Giants and Dable when he first got there, and then it did completely fall apart. Maybe that is their weapons, but the Steelers were also supposedly calling on Darius Slayton, so clearly they had at least one guy
Listen,
who was valuable, him and Neighbors.
The Giants were 9-6-1 in 2022. That is a classic Steelers season. They were 9-6-1. He completed 67% of his passes for 15 touchdowns and 5 picks. Okay, so that would enamor him here. He got some AP. Wait a second. Did he get a vote here for Offensive Player of the Year? That's MVP voting. Where is little Daniel Brown? No, he didn't get a vote. My bad. But he had a what I would imagine would be a Justin Fields type year, wouldn't you? Limits?
Yeah, I mean, one of my main concerns with Daniel Jones is protecting the football. Like, fumbles has been a huge, huge problem in his career. And
in whose career?
Daniel Jones.
Well, Fields was on pace for 17 fumbles here this year.
Yeah, so both of them, I mean, yeah, I guess Man, I guess it's not as far-fetched as a comparison that I might think it is, just looking at it from an outside perspective. Because when you look at the numbers, Daniel Jones, 8 touchdowns, 7 picks last year. The year before, 2 touchdowns, 6 picks before he ultimately was injured, went 1-5.
This is unbelievable.
His best year was his rookie year, 24 touchdowns, 12 picks.
Actually, it's very believable. I was talking about something else. Now I'm going down the rabbit hole of voting for awards back in 2022. And of course, Tomlin got votes for Coach of the Year that year, too. They went 9-8. Did Zach Taylor get votes this year? What are we doing here nationally with these votes for Tomlin every year? How do you get votes for Coach of the Year when you go 9-8? Didn't they miss the playoffs that year? Or am I hallucinating? What the hell is going on here? Did Zach Taylor get any votes this year? I mean, I don't understand what some people, why they're so enamored with the job that Mike Tomlin does. How do you get votes, five of them, five voting points for Coach of the Year when your team goes 9-8 and misses the playoffs? When they were worse that year than the previous year. Weren't they? He would have been the first coach ever to get to win Coach of the Year for being worse than he was the previous year. It's incredible.
And Zach Taylor did not receive
a top five vote. Of course he didn't. I was being facetious. Did he receive any? No, or he received no votes.
No votes.
That's beside the point. Daniel Jones did get votes that year for Comeback Player of the Year. Can you tell me who won 2022 Comeback Player of the Year limits?
Saquon Barkley.
Geno Smith.
Good pick.
Anyway, next.
All right. Included in that Jerry Dulac story that you were referencing are that the Steelers are expected to let Dan Moore and James Daniels test free agency.
Right.
Any bit surprised about that? I mean, James Daniels, not at all. But, I mean, Dan Moore, it seems like just the hesitancy to not move him to the right side of the line or to bench Dan Moore. I really wonder who had the love affair with Dan Moore. Like, is it Mike Tomlin that was infatuated with him and his abilities, or is this a Mike Tomlin indictment on Broderick Jones in his career? I still wonder about that as Dan Moore goes into free agency and supposedly he's going to get a big contract from somebody.
Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. That's number one. Number two, this makes sense to me, and I'm not surprised in the least. James Daniels was very good this season before he got hurt. How many games did he play? Did he play 3 or 4 before he got hurt? Did he get that many in? Very sparingly, but he was like the number one rated guard in the whole NFL in that limited amount of time. Did you know that by PFF?
No.
92.9 he was. But he was hurt, and he's aging, and he's making money. So, and they also have alternatives. Or an alternative with Mason McCormick. Their line better be good, and they better not invest a whole lot in it right now. It should be good. It should be Fatanu, McCormick, Frazier, Sayamalu, and Jones. And yeah, you're right. If Jones stinks at left tackle, then that's on Mike Tomlin and Omar.
The window is now open for players.
And by the way, I'm sorry. But he got a 58-7 this year, Broderick Jones.
Oof.
For what it's worth. But again, PFF, I mean, they have had guys go through there who are now NFL offensive coordinators. Well, I guess Bobby Slowick is out of work right now or signed on as a consultant somewhere. That was 65th out of 81 tackles. Would you like to know where Dan Moore ranked?
Yes.
Yes, you would. And I'm going to tell you. 67.2. Not horrible. I will say he got better. Like, he was passable, and he can't play right tackle, so he has no versatility. 42nd out of 81 tackles, just the very definition of average. He went from horrible to average in his career here. And when you start drafting tackles in the first round every year, you better start playing them. So it's time to find out once and for all about Broderick Jones. Obviously, Fatanu gets in there. Mason McCormick, I didn't think he embarrassed himself by any means, and Frazier was good. I mean, he looks like a keeper for many years to come. The offensive line is something that, you know, other than depth, I think it's, I'm not saying it's going to be good, but it should be ready to go. Those should be your players,
it
right?
It should be a strength, and McCormick with another year under his belt, I think will get
Not when you say it should be a strength, like you're saying it better be a strength, or you're predicting it to be a strength?
Both.
Okay.
Like I think it will be a strength, but it has to be. Like if they're going to want to play this offensive system and Arthur Smith style that they can effectively, they need the offensive line to maul people. And they're not Philadelphia with everybody averaging like 6'2", 325 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's the system to do it. Get Mekhi Becton at 370 and put him at right guard and just run over people. But Broderick Jones, like, this is going to be the time. He emerged as a leader. I still can't get over the three penalties on one drive that where he was rotating with Troy Faltani early in the season.
They should have thrown hats on the field in Denver that day, right, for a hat trick? I mean, that was incredible. I'm going to name some PFF grades limits, and you tell me if that sounds about right for the player. May I indulge you in that for a moment?
I would love to be indulged. May I engage you in a game of PFF association?
I'm sorry that I've interrupted our game of the Limitless Express.
No worries.
Ready? Who is Lance McCutcheon? I've never heard of him.
I think he's Andrew's brother.
George Pickens, 78.6, 24th out of 133 receivers. Sound right?
Yeah, I'd say so. That sounds about accurate for a number one guy.
I mean, it sounds accurate, but it doesn't sound good.
No, I mean, it should be better if you're talking about Pickens should be, because talent-wise, he's top five, and he could be top 15, so being on the outside of that near the top 25 is not where you want it to be, but based on what he did this year, that doesn't surprise me.
How about Najee? 77.2 grade. That's pretty good. 16th out of 59 halfbacks. They still call them halfbacks at PFF. 16th out of 59, so he's in the, I guess, top third, right? Does that sound right?
That's higher than I would have expected.
Me too. Me too, but maybe he did some other things well, like block, you know, and pass protection or catch the ball that helped his grade. I don't know, limits. You know, there's things beyond yards per carry, but he did only average 3.9, if I'm not mistaken. That seems a little high to me. I mentioned Broderick Jones. How about Connor Hayward down at 53.2? I'm not really sure what his role is. I had him pegged as sort of a low-key impact play guy. Like every once in a while, he would come out of nowhere to make a, you know, a big play in a game. I just don't think he's profiled properly as a fullback, like when he's a fullback in this system. Do you?
No, and it's not like they line him up in the I formation very much either. Like, sometimes he's just on the end of the line as an extra tight end, and the
right.
times that they have slipped him out and tried to throw him a pass, I can't remember what game it was, but he had a critical drop in one game, and his blocking did not improve this year. Like, a lot of defenders just got around him, so I don't know what purpose he's going to have on this team moving forward. I really don't.
Mason McCormick, a 57-7, that's 54th out of 77 guards. That's troublesome. Does it sound accurate?
No, I expected it to be better than that. Like, he did not have a great season. Like, this was supposed to be his redshirt year to sit behind James Daniels and wait his turn until next year. Didn't think he was that poor, but, I mean, there were moments where it seemed like Zach Frazier had to help him out on that right side. And maybe that's Broderick Jones' effect, too, bringing down his grade.
Defensively, T.J. Watt, they said, had the best year of his career. We measure it on strictly, you know, sacks and pass rushing stats all the time. They said he was third in the whole NFL at his position at a 91.7. Oh, I'm sorry. 2000. The last game must have brought him down a little bit. That's right off his career best of 91.9 from last season. Third out of 119 players. You like that? He had a pretty good coverage grade, and his run defense grade was outstanding this year. Limits.
Maybe they gave him the impact like Myles Garrett, the Myles Garrett Award from a year ago, where you kind of, you know, aren't seen from for the last four games, but the rest of the beginning of the season before that was very good. There's no doubt that Watt had an incredible year, but it was not the best year of his career.
I think there's some doubt about that. When he really didn't perform over the last five games in the playoff game, I don't know if you can call it incredible, but they think he did. I do think there's some doubt about that.
It's not his number one season of all time by far. I mean, he led the league in sacks one year with 22.5 and tied the single season record. And, I mean, we think about impactful key splash plays. He did not have nearly as many this year as he did in that year or even the year before that when he should have won Defensive Player of the Year.
I got one for you. PFF says Minka had a 65-2, which sounds like one of my test scores from high school. That's 42nd out of 98 safeties. Wow.
Yikes.
For a guy who I believe, isn't he still one of the three highest paid safeties in football?
Yeah, he is.
And that sounds about right, unfortunately, doesn't it to you?
It does. And it partly comes down to the freedom or lack thereof that they get him to be able just to move around. Like, nobody's Troy Polamalu, but I still think Minka has, like, the ability and the instinct to roam around and be play a true free safety that's not 30 yards off the ball.
Here's a horrifying one, and maybe the most horrifying one of all, I might add, limits. Joey Porter Jr., according to PFF, ranked 99th out of 116 corners. At a 54.6. What do you make of that?
Whoa. That is a lot worse than I expected, but I imagine that PFF factors in a lot of penalties, Joe. Like, how many multiple penalty games did Joey Porter Jr. had? He was one of the main leaders of all defensive players in defensive penalties. I think in penalties in general, like in the entire NFL, Joey Porter was in that upper echelon. I think top 10, maybe top 5 for defensive players. And overall penalties called against, like the amount of grabbing, and he got away with it last year. This past season is different. Like, whoever it was, maybe coaches, players, tipping off the referees, they
but
were
it
calling
has
it
to
a
be,
lot closer.
It has to be more than that. Like, let's see here. Penalties in the NFL, he had 10. So for defensive players, man, you're right. Most of these guys are offense. Who led the league? Offense or defense in penalties this year? Penalties called, not necessarily enforced. Who led the entire NFL limits?
I think it was the Chiefs.
Wrong.
Left tackle.
Laremy Tunsil from Houston, the offensive tackle, who smoked the bong going into the draft that year, remember?
Yes, and he fell in the draft.
Yes, and he fell on the floor, too.
He did, yes.
Deion Dawkins, these guys are all offensive tackles. The top six. There's only one defensive player in the league who had more. Two. Well, see this. The defensive player of the year, Patrick Surtain, had 11 compared to Porter's 10. So the penalties don't necessarily drive down your grade limits. And the only other guy in the whole league was Terrion Arnold, who's also a really good player for Detroit.
Yeah, and also a young guy that's, you know, I think just a rookie in the league, still establishing himself, but. Maybe
so that and Brian Branch had 9. So a lot of these guys who had penalties in secondaries had good years. He didn't. He decidedly didn't, Joey Porter Jr. You think he's going to be great, good, or average his career?
Good.
Man, I hope you're right. Marlon Humphrey had 9. So I just want to point out that you're wrong that the penalties figured out in this. I'm sorry, Limits. I shouldn't have done that.
No, I think it's a fair point. I mean, if Pat Surtain had that many penalties, what he obviously did other than that overcame the penalties and what PFF thought of him. Do you think that this is the reason why Grady Brown is no longer the secondary coach?
No. I don't know why. I think his contract ran out and they figured they would have to scapegoat somebody. Why not him?
Wow, that would be crazy if that's like the actual reason, not just, well, we thought that he didn't do a good enough job of developing Joey Porter Jr. as a coverage
corner. Went 10-8 and got blown out and gave up 300 rushing yards to their arch rival in a game where the national analysts said they were quitting, and they've made no changes of any significance. Yes, I know the inside linebackers are now coached by a different man. Plan the parade.
That's big.
Who was second on the team in penalties behind Joey Porter, now that I have that in front of me, from footballdatabase.com?
If it's anyone not named Broderick Jones, I would be surprised.
You're right about that.
And third has to be George Pickens.
Wrong about that.
Okay.
And decidedly wrong about that. Who's third on the team in penalties limits? Behind Joey Porter at 10, Broderick at 8.
I'm going to say Dante Jackson.
Alex Highsmith with 7.
Really?
Followed by Connor Hayward with 5, Minka, Van Jefferson, and Pickens, and Sayamalu and Mount Washington all had 4.
Highsmith popped into my mind, but I thought the time that he missed due to injury would have brought that number down a little bit.
I don't believe you. Holdings were 5 for Broderick Jones. Nobody else with more than... Well, where did Porter get all his penalties? Holt, pass interference, of course, with 6. Holding with 2. And what's a UR limits? Do you know?
A UR?
Yeah. I don't know what
that
means.
Off the top of my head, I don't.
Cordarrelle Patterson chipped in with two penalties, one of which he was frozen on a pitch out for.
You are unnecessary roughness.
Yes. You're right. Very good. Do you know who led the team in unnecessary roughness penalties? Wrong. Nobody had more than one.
Roderick Jones.
I think we've exhausted that topic. Next.
George Pickens in the end zone fighting with Greg Newsome.
What is RP? Roughing the passer, I would imagine, right?
Yeah.
Do you know who led the team in roughing the passer penalties?
Probably TJ Watt.
Wrong. Alex Highsmith.
You can breathe on the quarterback and they might call it.
Do you know who led in offsides? Let me see here if that has to be. Yeah. Who led the team in offsides penalties?
I'm going to say Larry Ogunjobi.
Wrong.
Just for fun.
Alex Highsmith.
Wow. Alex Highsmith, the leader in the clubhouse in the penalty category. He better be sent off to the penalty box like Team USA and Canada fighting in the first 9 seconds.
Who led the team in false starts?
Broderick Jones.
Wrong. It was a tie between Connor Hayward and Isaac Seumalo. That can't happen. That just can't happen.
And Connor Hayward's barely on the field.
What is going on here?
I have one more for you, Joe, if you'd like.
50-minute mark on the fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Route 19 Peters Township. So I would love that.
The window now to franchise tag players is open, and there's an expectation that the Bengals...
He sucks.
Who do you think they're going to tag?
I don't know.
There's an expectation they're going to tag T. Higgins again, which would be at $26 million, all fully guaranteed, after they tagged him last year. And it's being in the deadline is
I interrupt
March 7th.
This story to tell you I have breaking news. I got a call from a high school student at Baldwin who's writing a story on Mr. Austin Bechtold.
Oh, my gosh. Right now?
She interviewed me. I just get a text at 11:43. Hi, Mr. Starkey. I finished my Bechtold story. And I'm going to get a sneak preview of this story, Limits. How do you like that?
Ooh.
Oh, my God. That means I could add in little details, couldn't I? Maybe an anecdote or two?
I hope Professor Dr. Starkey does not give us editing access to this story.
What is happening here? She obviously interviewed you.
Yes, and...
Is this a personal profile, the life and times of Austin Bechtold? Is it geared toward this... maybe one of your projects at Baldwin? What are we talking about here?
So it's geared towards me calling Baldwin football, Baldwin basketball, and doing some Baldwin volleyball stuff at the high school for our sports network. It's also geared towards my journey to working here at The Fan and working with you. And every time I talk to somebody, everybody always asks about you, Joe, and they want to know what it's like working with you.
And I'm sure they do.
They want to know about your singing and the songs that you make.
Right.
And I talked about me covering the NCAA tournament the last 2 years with Pitt and the ACC tournament and traveling for that and going from Baldwin where I was.
Did you talk about your inspirations in the business? Perhaps me or Donnie Football inspired you?
You were
Chris
brought
Muller,
up.
Chris Muller and Pony.
Pony who was brought up,
who
yes.
Who inspired you?
My radio mentor, Crowley.
Ah, Crowley's an inspiration. Lanny Fritteri, maybe?
Oh, yes. I think Lanny was interviewed as a part of the story.
Holy horse milk.
Yeah.
Well, the girl was wonderful. Her name is Emma Powell.
Yes. Emma did a great job with this story.
Sports editor for Baldwin High School school newspaper.
Jack and I did
it's called The Purbolite?
It's called The Purbolite, yes.
Did you write for it?
I did.
What'd you cover?
I was the
Baldwin,
first,
I imagine.
I was the first ever podcast editor that The Purbolite had.
You broke new ground at The Purbolite.
I did. Me and Jamin White for The Purbolite. And
where is he now?
He is now in the Air Force.
He is?
He was in the Air Force. He's graduating this summer, and then he's going to Montana to study journalism.
Holy corn follicles.
Yeah, so I still keep in touch with
him.
Did
you know Paul Skeens in the Air Force?
He did not, no. They weren't there at the same time. Why have I never asked him that?
It's a good question. They were there at the same time. Anyway, I interrupted you. I'll be reading that story and making additions and subtractions momentarily. I've taken over the job of de facto editor of the Limits feature story at the Purbolite.
I'm very curious to read the story. So
you're not allowed to read it. And she can't give you a preview. You don't get to preview it.
No,
she's a journalist, and I'm going to remind her of that. At least be critical in some spots. If you need to rip him, rip him, and do not pass anything by him before it reaches publication.
Yes, please. I mean, be honest. If I need to be ripped, be ripped. I'm sure Joe will say, oh, Limits, he's like, it's so mad at him about this and this and that and the music and this.
Yes, of course
I will.
To
be fair, I'm sure there's something about the music.
Limits
should just sing.
Yeah. Anyway,
people are texting in. Go Baldwin basketball. Yeah, baby, we're playing tonight against Penn Trafford. A 2-15 matchup, I'm calling it.
I'm voting for Penn Trafford because that was Pekka Arsic's home team. Remember that?
No.
I think it was. Wasn't he a person? I think he was.
Sonny Vaccaro is from Trafford.
And Sonny Vaccaro. So where's the game?
To Baldwin.
I'm definitely going. I don't know who I'm rooting for.
Are you?
Yeah.
Doran, I think, is going too.
Yeah, I'm going to go. And I'm going to heckle you from behind. So on the broadcast, you're going to hear swear words.
Ah, great. I'm sure that'll go over well. Oh, I have actually a good story about that. We were doing a football game at Moon years ago. It was like the last regular season game of the year. And the Moon coaches are right behind us in the booth.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got there and I turned around, I was like, ah, bleep, this is going to be bad. The coach behind us, F-bomb after F-bomb, and I eventually turned around after the first drive, and I said, buddy, you got to stop. Like,
you told the coach to stop swearing?
I looked at him, and I like turned around and gave him a look, and he was like, oh, my bad, dude, my bad. Because it was like an open box where like we were on one level, and then one level up.
Is that appropriate of city limits? We might have to throw that out as a topic.
Well, I mean,
an emotional man who prepared for the game.
We have a lot of young people who are listening to our broadcast, like a lot of families.
That.
Like, I can't be having that go out over the air picked up on my mics. I can't have that. That's just not good.
How many people?
I was respectful.
I know. I hear you.
As respectful as I could.
How many people listen to a broadcast all over Baldwin?
Yeah, our football broadcasts get about 1,200 people or so, and basketball does very well, too.
I want to see the game now tonight. I really do.
And that's just what goes on YouTube.
All right.
So, like, when we put recaps and highlights and stuff like that,
sure.
That can also...
you were mentioning a player very quickly. Who was it? For the Steelers? Somebody they can get? When I interrupted you?
What I was mentioning is that the Bengals are franchise tagging T. Higgins. At least that's the expectation.
Oh, yeah, of course they are.
And if not, then they're going to try to get a long-term deal done. We'll see if that happens.
He ain't coming here. Why would he want to come here? To play for Artie Smith?
Point is, though, the Bengals this offseason now will have to sign Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Trey Hendrickson.
It all can be done, limits. As Burrow said, look at the Eagles. They seem to find a way to sign a bunches of great players, so we can, too. Anybody can.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.